for me, being able to do what I do, i.e. M&A law, in connection with Israel, and try and play my part in helping develop the economy and make sure its continuity, has been a real career highlight.
Wow, because Israel is a miracle. At the end of the day, the way the economy is being run, 70 years on, it's like, wow. Even if you're in England, to be able to have that effect is massive. What kind of amounts are we talking about, that, for example, for the bonds, or for, I know that you were involved in the largest IPO in 2022. Take us through a little bit of the amounts and the time that you had to work and the kind of people that you came across.
So lots of these deals are in the billions, like the bonds are several billions. But the truth is, there's not really much difference in a 10 billion deal to a 10 million deal. Reality, but they both take similar amount of work, and can be actually smaller deals but sometimes be more complicated than the bigger deals, because people just want to get a deal done and they can afford to just move quickly. I'm contributing to something that's making a difference.
Welcome to Lessons for Life, and I'm joined by Daniel Turgel. It's a pleasure to have you, Daniel. Welcome to Lessons for Life. And Daniel is a partner at White and Case, one of the world's leading global law firms, and has had a significant impact when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, as well as playing a leading role in several high-profile transactions, particularly in the Israeli and global technology sectors. You are also the chair of the Jewish Affinity Group, and it's a pleasure to have you on Lessons for Life. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. Delighted to be here.
It's really an honor when we sit with people that have achieved so much in their life. And I just wonder if you can take me through a little bit about where it all started for you.
Yeah, so I grew up in Northwest London in Stanmore, Rushbrook Up Primary School and JFS Secondary School. And I always enjoyed my Judaism. I became very involved in Jewish life in primary school. But my foundations were from there, and also my synagogue in Sam, which was an amazing small community where we had great mentors and leaders around us to help us develop as a group of young, starting from children through to young adults. And then in JFS, I was very fortunate to find a great friendship circle. When I was 14 years old, I went for 6 months to Yemen Ord, an immigration village in the north of Israel, which really cemented all of the early formative years that I had had from a Jewish perspective. And I became very passionate about Judaism and about Israel. And then when I came back to England as a young adult, I was very determined to continue in that path and make sure that whatever I did in the future, that Judaism and Israel was a big part of that.
That's impressive, because many people go away to Israel. Many people have these year offs or a few months off, and they come back and they stay indifferent. What compelled you to come back and want to do something? Did you have any occurrences or anything that happened over there? Or was it just an ideology once you've seen and you've expected? What were you thinking?
I think I'd always had it in me, my early school life, my family life in particular, the history of my family, my grandparents being Holocaust survivors, my parents being very passionate about the Judaism. It was always a big part of me, but spending time in Israel, particularly living, I shared a room with two Russian boys. They came to Israel with nothing, and to spend those precious months with such amazing people who had sacrificed their lives to come and move to Israel, as we say, and start up a whole new existence in our ancestral land was something that was deeply inspiring, something I was part of.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. And I was actually in Poland a few weeks ago with the chief rabbi of Israel, and visiting all the different places, especially in Krakow. Tell me a little bit about your grandparents. Did you get to know them? You said they were Holocaust survivors. Did they impart any knowledge onto you?
Yes, as well. I was very, very fortunate to spend a lot of time with my grandparents. My father's parents were amazing people. My grandmother, Gina Turgel, was a very well-known Holocaust survivor, one of the first to talk about her experiences and share them with the world. She was one of my main inspirations in life, and phenomenal ancestry and stories. I strive to perpetuate and continue. And my grandfather was in the British Armed Forces and actually liberated my grandmother from Bergen-Belsen.
Wow, what a
I was very lucky to, as I say, spend lots of time with them growing up and ask them all the time about their experiences. Look at my grandfather's medals on a daily basis, and when he passed away, I was fortunate enough that he honoured me with possession of his medals, so I look at them on a very regular basis. As my grandmother spoke about her experiences every day of her life, and the lessons that she learned and the importance of building bridges and learning from the past to build a better future. And that really has shaped a lot of my journey in life. Yeah. My mother's parents were also phenomenal people. Her father, Sam Gardner, was also a Holocaust survivor with incredible stories. And my mother goes around the world talking about his experiences and sharing his stories with everyone still to today. It's been a very big part of who I am.
I think that, you know, what happened 70, 80 years ago, and the world's done a bit of a 360 nowadays. A lot of people are under pressure. We're not experiencing the same, thank God, as they experience, but there's a lot to learn from the older generation. And unfortunately, as they're passing away, we who have heard directly from them now have the responsibility of pushing that forward to the younger generation and explaining to them, because they are going to come across a lot of trials and tribulations of their own in different manners. But there's so much to learn from the older generation, and sometimes the younger generation doesn't see it. So how do you portray this? Have you spoken to other people? Do you go out there? What are you doing to pass on that kind of knowledge?
So just anecdotally, so a few weeks ago was the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Bergen-Belsen. And, you know, as a family, we felt that it's very important for us to be there. Multi-generational as well. I was very fortunate to actually have gone with my grandparents many years ago for several other momentous memorial and anniversary events. And so with them no longer being around, it's an obligation for us to take on the mantle and make sure that we're passing on the messages to others that they're no longer able to do themselves. So we went with my parents and my brother. My brother was also leading the official memorial service, which was a very emotional moment as well. And bringing it kind of back into the world of work, it was important for me to actually mark that occasion, not just privately amongst my family and friends, but to put it on LinkedIn, to put it on social media, and to let people know what I've been doing and why I've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put up a post, a photo of us by the entrance to Bergen-Belsen, wearing my grandfather's medals that he received for liberating the camp and everything else that he did during the Second World War. And it was actually the most liked and viewed post that I've ever had, which was quite inspiring. And the reaction that I got from friends, colleagues and clients was quite phenomenal, actually. And interestingly, at work I was asked to write a piece for our quarterly magazine about my family's history and about why it was so important for me to go to mark that occasion and why that's influenced my life and lessons that we can bring to work today, which I've done. It's been published in a few weeks. It's always been very important to me to I was told many years ago to never mix business and pleasure. My modus operandi has been the opposite. I want to mix business and pleasure. To me, it's all the same thing. And
it depends what you call business, what you call pleasure. Some people, business is the pleasure and pleasure is the business.
It's true. But like, to me, bringing your full self to work has been fundamental. I remember when I was interviewing for law firms, I was highly advised by many successful people in the city not to wear a kippah. My teams.
Mm-hmm. Kippah being the head cover.
Yeah, yeah. Being a head covering. And I'd worn it pretty much every day of my life since I was 14, since my time in Israel that I mentioned earlier. And to me, it was a fundamental part of my life. But I'm not a great Jew. There are lots of things I need to improve upon, and I'm very aware of where I can be doing things better. But there are certain outwardly Jewish things that have been very important to me in my life, and that I don't want to sacrifice or compromise on. Mm-hmm. One of them is wearing my head covering. Another one has been observing Sabbath and keeping a very strict kosher diet. Those have all been absolutely fundamental to everything I've done in my life, and I wasn't willing to sacrifice any of those when it came to the world of work. So going into those interviews, I decided that I was going to cover my head.
That's a big decision, especially as we're talking about quite a few years ago.
Yeah, talking about 22 years ago. Right. It was different. The city was different. And actually, within Big Law, I wasn't aware of anyone else apart from one colleague of mine who was also applying around a similar time to me. But we weren't aware of anyone else in any top law firm that was wearing the head covering in the city. So, yeah, it was a big decision, but I'm very pleased that I made that decision, and it became an important part of my journey, and framed many of the decisions that came after that.
Mm-hmm. And when you went for these interviews, did you experience any kind of looks or any experiences which would have shown you, what are you doing? How come? How dare you? Or did anything put you off or encourage you on the other side?
As I kind of alluded to earlier, to me, like bringing my thoughts up to work and mixing my business and pleasure is part of who I am. It's my personality. It's why I think I'm good at what I do. And therefore, it was, for me personally, a positive. It was a helpful decision, and it helped drive my practice, my success, because I was embracing who I am and not hiding who I am. And therefore, this was me. This is what I stand for. And it became a propeller for my career.
And so tell me, during your career, which you have really done incredibly well, you've come across big instances when you've been working on method projects. Firstly, take us through like the biggest achievements and the kind of projects that you've been working on in the past decade or so.
Yeah, I've worked on many amazing transactions. I've been very fortunate to work a lot in Israel, in some amazing Israel related transactions. And actually, in my former firm, I started doing a lot of work in Israel when I was a very, very junior lawyer. And after about 3 years or so, they asked me if I would go to move to Israel to set up an Israel practice, which was a phenomenal experience, particularly as a junior lawyer. And I went with my wife, and we moved to Jerusalem and actually had our first child while we were over there, and built, you know, what's still today, thank God, a very successful Israel practice, working with some of the largest and well-known Israeli companies globally, and also working with incoming investors doing big transactions in Israel. And also last year, we were also very fortunate to work for the State of Israel on its very large bond that it raised off October 7th to help fund the last 18 months. So for me, being able to do what I do, i.e. M&A law, in connection with Israel, and try and play my part in, you know, helping develop the economy and ensure its continuity, has been a real career highlight.
Wow, because Israel is a miracle. At the end of the day, the way the economy is being run 70 years on, it's like, wow, it's phenomenal. And there's a snowball effect that's happening across the world. And to be actually, even if you're in England, to be able to have that effect is massive. What kind of amounts are we talking about? That, for example, for the bonds, or for, I know that you were involved in the largest IPO in 2022, if that's correct, on the London Stock Exchange. Take us through a little bit of the amounts and the time that you had to work and the kind of people that you came across.
So lots of these deals are in the billions, like the bonds are several billions.
Nowadays we say billions, like we said millions 20 years ago. Yeah. Soon we'll be saying trillions, a lot of them trillions.
Yeah, but the truth is, there's not really much difference in a 10 billion deal to a 10 million deal reality, but they both take similar amount of work and can be actually smaller deals will sometimes be more complicated than the bigger deals because people just want to get a deal done and they can afford to just move quickly. So the numbers are nice and they look good on paper and on LinkedIn, but actually the deal is a deal. But for me, I'm always very proud to be involved in these transactions, whether they're Israel related or not, but particularly when I feel like I'm contributing to something that's making a difference. I was involved in some very significant transactions post the Abraham Accords, which for me felt like I was literally part of history. I believe that there will be many more of these monumental and historic deals that will be transacted in the near future. And I've been spending the last 2 years trying to make sure that I'm there and can be part of that story, because these are the times, these are the transactions that will shape our future. And when I'm talking to my grandchildren, I can't think of anything better than describing my kind of legal career and using these monumental historic transactions as evidence of the impact that one can have and the ability to marry up one's personal and professional goals.
It's incredible, because right now we are definitely in a historic era where whatever action you are going to do is going to have an effect on all future generations. And when you work, when your person goes to work, got to like what we work, right? Got to enjoy. That's one number one kind of advice you want to give to a younger person is choose something that you're going to enjoy. But as a rabbi, one number one kind of advice is you're going to be doing it anyway. You're going to do something that you enjoy. Make it also l'shem shamayim, meaning l'shem shamayim, meaning also you're serving God. And actually, eventually, the idea, the whole purpose of us being in this world is to serve God. And we can actually work and serve God at the same time, just as we can play football and serve God at the same time because we're doing exercise and getting our bodies, you know, good. So too, when we go to work, we can also actually make that something much more spiritual as well as just the physical and bringing in the 10 billion and the etc. into the world. So when you went originally, you said JFS, and then you've gone to Israel and you've had your experience with your grandparents and your parents, and they've obviously portrayed an incredible love for Judaism. What enables you to continue? What gives you the strength? You said Shabbat is very important for you. You want to go with the kippah. Obviously, there's a lot of anti-Semitism. There's a lot of winds away. There's a lot of atheism. There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other winds. What enables you, gives you the strength to continue?
Yeah, I say Shabbat and keeping kosher have actually been the driving force and have enabled me to do what I do and to get where I've got to. Obviously, there's always room for improvement in everything. Those two things in and of themselves have allowed me to continue to remain true to what I believe is the fundamental importance in life. I work crazy hours for the last 20 years. It's been challenging.
It's a blessing that we have you today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's, from the moment the Sabbath finishes on Saturday night till the moment it comes in on Friday, I'm on my phone, I'm in meetings, I'm having calls, I'm running around, I'm traveling the world. But to know that whatever happens, as soon as Shabbat starts, as soon as the Sabbath commences, I'm done. And I'm with my family and sitting around the table together. That's literally enabled me to do what I do.
Takes a lot of discipline.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had times in my career where I was given ultimatums. I remember one partner when I was maybe 1 year qualified, so I'd been working for 3 years, and a partner came up to me and said that you've got to decide, it's Sabbath of yours or it's your career. Wow. You just need to make a decision. And that came after actually quite a very challenging moment. I was running a deal, and this was in the day of the Black Breed, and I was on a call with him in his room, and I was also on my Black Breed, sending an email at the same time for another deal, and they asked a question on the call, and I didn't respond because I was focused on my BlackBerry. And he grabbed my BlackBerry, threw it against the wall, smashed it to pieces, and just was fuming. And actually, yeah, a large part of that wasn't because I was juggling too much. I mean, lawyers have to juggle a lot all of the time, but knowing that Shabbat's coming and you need to get things done and kind of hand it over to someone for that period of time adds an additional layer of stress that is significant. And everyone always thinks that, oh, it's amazing, you know, you've got that 24 hours off or 25 hours off, and you can just go and be with your family and enjoy it. We're all still working in the office. And yes, it is amazing, and I'm very fortunate, and I love it. And I'll talk about that, why I love it and what it brings to my life in a moment. But it's extremely stressful for the whole week, knowing that you're going to disappear for that period of time, and making sure that you can hand over things properly so that you're not going to make someone's life more difficult, and you're not going to cause trouble for your clients and for your manager, etc. So it's a very stressful period of time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that instance when, you know, I actually saw something, you know, physically being destroyed that was related to my Sabbath observance, followed by the comment as I was running out of the office that I need to make a decision as to whether I want to observe the Sabbath or have a career, really just, again, strengthened my resolve and just made me more passionate about making this work and showing people that it can work. So I spent, you know, quite a lot of time trying to mentor and give people tips for how I've managed to balance things and make Shabbat work within the city and within a very high pressure environment. And it's not easy, and it really, you can't just expect to just turn off and have your Shabbat and then come back and go and have a successful career. You need to build whole infrastructure around it. You need to make sure that you have people who are willing to cover for you, and that means you have to cover for them. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to go the extra mile to look after you and look after your interests, and you have to do the same for them, actually often do more for them. And that might be covering people when they go on holiday and making sure they get a proper holiday, or if they have a child and they're out of the office for a few weeks or a few months, and making sure that you're looking after them appropriately. And just about being a good person, I'm not saying this is like some kind of preconceived evil notion that you'll be nice to someone so they can be nice to you, but it's, you can't expect these things to just happen and everything to just work. And sometimes I've seen other Jews in the city who observe Sabbath or keep kosher, and it doesn't work. They don't understand why it doesn't work, and they complain and they say this person, you know, has not been right to them, or maybe even accuse people of certain behaviors, when actually, when it's stripped back and I spend time with them and try and work out why these things have happened, it's because they haven't put the right building blocks in place. Mm-hmm. A lot of work is required to make sure that you can take off the time and that it can be the most benefit to you and your colleagues, and that people don't resent, that people actually find it endearing, that people respect you having those boundaries. And I've also been very fortunate to have clients who, you know, want to work for me because of that. Mm. And we've had some crazy transactions over the years. I've been running multi, as I said, my numbers don't matter, but for these purposes, I've been running multi-billion transactions where I am the linchpin. I am the person driving things forward. And lots of deals get signed on the weekend. Lots of deals complete on Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Normally Friday, right until the end. They're just,
yeah.
That's the most testing.
Yeah, those are the most. Those the most deals, particularly in my space and the M&A space, will happen over a weekend. And that certainly used to be the case prior to COVID. And so what happens when you've done three all-nighters in a row, which used to happen very, very often, and it's coming up to Shabbat, and it looks like the deal's going to sign, be ready to be signed late Friday night or Saturday morning, and you've got to disappear, but you're the one who's running the deal. No one else. You can't hand over all of that knowledge. So, you know, I've been very fortunate where I've had clients. As I say, it's all about communication, making sure that everyone knows at the beginning, even though not everyone knows what this means, but making sure that when you're working with new people, whether that's clients or colleagues, that you explain that you'll work 24/7, bend over backwards, you'll do whatever they need you to do. And yeah, I've always gone the extra mile. That's been a big part of me and who I am. I would always go the extra mile for my clients, but I have my boundaries and being very clear that whatever happens at 7 p.m. or in the winter at 2 p.m., I'm gone on a Friday. Whatever happens, I'm gone. But I'll be back at 3 p.m. on Saturday, and I'll be straight on it. I'll be in the office if I need to be at 4 p.m., and I'll stay all night Saturday night, and I'll get it done. And it's amazing how many clients, even massive multinational clients who have crazy large transactions at stake, will respect that. And actually, everyone appreciates a bit of time off. If you've had a crazy busy week, and you can have 24 hours where everyone can go home. Yeah. Everyone can be with their family. Everyone can have a dinner. Everyone can have a sleep. Regain some energy. Come back on Saturday night. It's amazing how many times people have thanked me for that. And actually, you know, Jews as well have sometimes said, I never really realized the benefit of Shabbat. Mm-hmm. How amazing it can be to have that.
Shabbat in Makor HaBracha. It's the center of all bracha. You know, when I was in Krakow, so we went to visit the Ramah, Rav Moshe Israelis synagogue. And his father was very, very wealthy, and he was a big merchant in Krakow. And he was selling, like, clothing. And he had a thing that he always used to close his shop midday Friday. So Shabbat can come in at 4 o'clock, as you mentioned, on winter. Let's say Friday can come in at 7, 8 o'clock in the summer when the sun sets. But he always closed his shop at midday. And at one stage, one very wealthy count sent his messenger to buy a lot of merchandise. And the guy said, listen, midday, I'm closing. I said, yeah, okay, I need another hour. You know, this is for the count. It's going to make a massive deal. And he said, but I did tell you, I have to close. In the end, he closed his shop 12 o'clock. The guy went out fuming. You just lost your $1 billion. The ending of the story is he never got the $1 billion. The guy didn't come back in the story. But what happened is the next year, he was blessed with a son. And his son became Rav Moshe Israelis. Rav Moshe Israelis is the author of the, you know, on the Shulchan Aruch of the Beit Yosef. Over there, writing the code of law for all Ashkenazi Jewry till today, thousands, hundreds of thousands are learning his Torah. And the idea is sometimes if we sacrifice something because of our belief in God, obviously God created the world in 6 days, on the seventh he rested. So the seventh is very opportune time to show our belief in God. We can't lose from it. We can't lose from it. So even though sometimes you might think that you're losing, but we're never losing. And I think that idea that you mentioned about preparing the environment, telling everybody early in advance, it also goes well with the fact that you actually wear a kippah, because then people can also expect. So sometimes I get students coming to me, they got difficult with Shabbat, but they're not wearing a kippah. So the guy's like, okay, why can you do this? Well, they're not keeping kosher. So keeping consistent also enables you to go out there and say, this is who I am. These are my beliefs. And I will do everything to help the firm continue in its correct path. It's not easy, as you mentioned. But, you know, I think that's an incredible lesson for our listeners.
Yeah, I also have some interesting questions. I guess since October 7th in particular, lots of Jews in the city have maybe felt like they want to be more Jewish at work, or they want to be able to display their Jewishness. And they may not necessarily be particularly observant, but they want to feel like they can be themselves at work and maybe have a Friday night dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you suddenly, when you haven't ever had a Friday night dinner or never told anyone you need to leave early on a Friday night, decide that suddenly you're going to do that and just expect everything to work? I think the same principles apply. And actually, we've had a few people at work in my firm who have decided to have that period of time where they're with their family and they go for Friday night dinner. So it's all about communication again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as you're open and transparent, and everyone's allowed to have one or two things that they can prioritize ahead of their work or alongside their work. And most professional organizations will understand and respect that. So if it's your gym time or if it's yoga time, whatever it may be, you can always incorporate something Jewish, something meaningful into your daily routine, professional routine, as long as it's not spontaneous and as long as is communicated.
And tell me now, looking forwards, you will spend some time in Israel, working over here. Where do you see yourself going forwards?
So to think about going forwards, I think about my children. Interestingly, I brought my kids to work last week, and thank God I've got four children. And I took my I've got three boys and one girl. Boys are 11, 9, and 6. I took them to work for the whole day, actually, which is always quite brave. And
cutting up stuff around you, drawing, checking this.
Yeah, exactly. And I brought them to our team meeting, about 40 of us in our team meeting. And I asked them if they wanted to talk to the team, maybe to introduce themselves and to tell the team who they are, where they are in life, and what they enjoy doing, or what they want to be when they're older.
Such pressure for a 6 and 9 and 11, yeah.
Yeah. What was amazing was all three of my kids said they want to be a lawyer when they're older.
Wow, that's a success. That is a success. You know that you're doing something right when they want to be daddy.
And people didn't understand. It's a very unusual thing. Most kids, when I was that age, I wanted to be a footballer.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my kids says he wants to be a footballer until he's 26. And then when he's hit the peak of his career, he wants to retrain as a lawyer. Okay. And then he wants to be everyone's boss in the room. That's what he said. But I think it goes back to what I said earlier about bringing your full self to work and being true to who you are and mixing your business and pleasure in your own way. Because my kids see, I'm in Israel every few weeks, and I'm organizing Friday night dinner for our partners or our colleagues. And, all of this is just part of my life as a lawyer. Like they don't differentiate between what's Jewish and what's legal, and it's all like the same thing. So for them, when they say they want to be a lawyer, it's not that they want to, study legal cases and stuff like that. They just see that actually it's possible to incorporate all of that. And as I keep saying, there's lots of things that I can improve on and do better. But it was, people didn't understand at work how they could make that assertion and be confident that's what they want to do with their lives. And it was a proud moment, obviously. I was kind of humbled. And to me, it's an indication that you can combine all the elements in life. And so, for the future, I'd love to continue doing what I'm doing. I'd love to continue being a part of these historic times, particularly with regards to Israel relations. The Israel practice that we've established is, extremely important to my professional career and my personal identity. And I'd love to be able to help form and to be able to be a part of the negotiations with other Arab nations, and to increase the prevalence of the Abraham Accords.
There is going to be much more now. We talk about another 4-5+ countries that will be joining. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Look, I think the arrangements and the relationship with the UAE has been phenomenal. That's been kind of the main driving force from a business perspective. I'm very hopeful that Saudi Arabia will join those accords as well, which will be transformative. I also have to do a fair bit of work in the region. So to be able to amalgamate all of those relationships and to move forward with the leading powers in the region in a collaborative manner is going to be a massive change. And the opportunity with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Israel and the UAE from a global perspective is phenomenal. And it will change the world forever.
And finally, if you are to say a few words to the next generation, to the younger generation of advice, a few words of advice to them. You've got an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, a student that's looking for the future, a Jewish person here in London. What kind of advice can you give them? They come to you and say, Daniel, listen, not just about career. Give me some advice, some general advice for my life. What would you say?
So work out what's important to you in life and what your boundaries are, and stint in it. It doesn't matter in what realm we're talking about, but just work out what's important to you and let those be your foundation and your building block. The first lesson that I give whenever I'm talking to students, the legal profession is never burn a bridge. The world is extremely small. The Jewish world is even smaller. You never know where you're going to come across anyone. And I've had so many instances where I could have fallen out with someone. I felt like I was wronged, or they felt like they were wronged. And whatever the situation is, it's never worth having any bad vibes, bad karma, depending on your perspective.
Give over.
So always, I will try to pick up the phone and smooth things over. Lots of difficult moments in one's career, in one's life. We upset people all the time. Sometimes it's intentional, a lot of the time it's not intentional. But whenever you have the opportunity, pick up the phone and say sorry. And not only for your own benefit, because you never know where you'll come across them, but it makes you feel much better. And holding resentment and being angry is not good. And it holds you back in your development and in the opportunities that you're presented with. Just clearing the air and trying to be positive in life is very important.
I think that's amazing. That's incredible. It's been an honor to have you on the Lessons for Life podcast. Thank you so much for taking of your time and portraying incredible ideas to all of us. And we wish you a lot of hatzlacha, a lot of success in your endeavors. Amen.
Thank you so much.
Great to see you.